5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another episode of Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott. Robin Christofferson is also with me, as always, from AbilityNet. Hello to you, Robin.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, everyone. Hope everyone is well.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's the key thing. And we are going to talk a little bit about the coronavirus today. Of course, it's unavoidable, frankly, but we're not going to dwell on it. That's the good news. We are going to be focusing on technology stuff, because that's what we're here for. We're going to try and lift people's spirits, and a bit of distraction technique going on here as well, just to try and get away from it, I think, for our own sanity, if nothing else. Andy's also here as well with the emails. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin. Hope you're both well.
Yeah, so far.
That's so good.
Yeah.
good.
I know, it's fingers crossed moment, isn't it? But yeah, look, lots to talk about. Coronavirus is in the headlines, of course. It's all over the news. Can't get away from it. But interestingly, Robin, one of the challenges for us blind people has been access to information about COVID-19. And you've spotted a website that's accessible and full of info.
Absolutely. Well, certainly the basics, and he's developing it all the time because I've been in contact with the developer. So yeah, there's loads of graphs and charts and infographics out there, but they're not particularly accessible for a screen reader user, for example. But this new website, cvcoronavirusstats.net, so cvstats.net, will give you the latest coronavirus stats, both globally and by country. So very accessible. Very easy to use, very, you know, intuitively set out. If you go to the global stats, for example, and hit enter on that or spacebar, it will open up a table that just gives you the global stats. So we've got those for today. What have we got? 350,000 plus cases in the world at the moment to date. 15,000 plus deaths, etc. 100,000 people have recovered, and there are similar stats by country. If you expand that particular table, and as I say, they're being updated all the time. In the per country one, it also gives you the number of new cases per day. Here in the UK, at the time of recording, there's been zero new cases in the UK today and zero deaths today. And there's also a column for recovered, the number of officially recorded people that have had the virus and recovered. And one of the things I queried with the developer was why that number is so much smaller than the difference between the number of cases and the number of deaths. And the reason being is because there's a long tail. So if people do get the virus and they are confirmed with that, then it's a long time before they can be signed off as being out of the woods and recovered. So if you look at this table on this website and you know that is a question mark in your mind, that's what that's all about. He also said that he is going to be developing it all the time and plans very soon to add in trends. And this is, you know, will be done accessibly, so it won't be in kind of graph or chart form, because that's the real number we want. In there at the moment, it hasn't got whether the number of cases are accelerating or if it's, you know, decelerating, decreasing. And that's the key thing, isn't it? Whether each day, as day by day goes on, the number of new cases is dwindling or is it still accelerating? And he's going to put that in very shortly soon because he's got the data. Just needs to add that functionality in. So guys, if you want to know more about CV and how it's affecting your country or the world in at large, cvstats.net.
And we should also say that, you know, we are pre-recording this program as we do regularly, actually, but we do this about 24 hours in advance of the air date. And of course, our show is repeated as well. So those numbers are always subject to change. So the fact that Robin mentions zero cases today is where we are at the moment. I think in the UK, the numbers tend to get posted up around 2 p.m. each day, I think. So, yeah, those that's why it'll probably said it's zero today. But, yeah, it's getting access to information is the key thing. And I think a lot of people want to know where they can get advice. I do think the RNIB is becoming a great source of this. Their website's full of information. RNIB.org.uk is definitely the place to go for as much information as you will be able to get from them, but also the services that are available from RNIB as well. You know, a lot of people using Zoom, we're going to hear a couple of emails about this later as well, Andy, but, you know, a lot of people out there using Zoom for communicating, which is a platform that up until recently a lot of people had no idea about. We've been using it here on Tech Talk. I use it all the time. I love Zoom. Yeah. I think it's a great program. Mm-hmm.
It is, yeah, and it's handy in our situation, not just a Tech Talk show, but the entire station. So we've got presenters from all over Scotland currently right now using Zoom and using it to create what they would normally do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, we should say that Andy's at home with the world's dodgiest mic. I don't know what's going on with your mic over there.
Oh, has it started again?
It's doing that weird clicky thing again, which is awfully weird. But listen, he's going to sort that out during the show. We're going to turn, though, first off to something that I promised to do for last week, but unfortunately we couldn't get around to. In fact, I promised it, Robin, and now you're delivering it. This is how it works here at Tech Talk, you see.
I know my place.
Yeah. I come up with all the ideas and you guys do all the work. But yeah, this was, you might remember a few weeks ago I talked about using my keyboard, my lovely Logitech K380 with my iPhone. And I showed you the kind of very basics of getting around the screen, using QuickNav, all that lovely stuff. Well, Robin, you have been testing out how to use your Logitech K380 keyboard along with your iPhone to surf the web.
Thanks, Stephen. So let's finish off this iOS from the keyboard demo that Stephen started last week. This time we're going to focus on the web. I, like Stephen, have that K380 nice keyboard from Logitech, about £30 or so, and you can easily switch between three devices just by pressing F1, F2 or F3. I've got it linked up with my iPhone 8, just like Stephen had as well. I've got QuickNav on by pressing the left and right arrows. If I do them again, we've turned it off, turned it back on again. I'm on the home screen. If I just arrow right, it's like doing VO right because I've got QuickNav on.
Nuzzle. Audible. Easy Reader. Safari. Settings.
I can just arrow through the different home screen items, but we're going to look at Safari.
Safari.
I will use the up and down arrows together to click.
Safari. Text field. Is editing. Character mode. Insertion point at end.
Actually, I should probably have said double tap, shouldn't I? So I'm in Safari here, and it said is editing. So if I type in a web address like www.bbc.co.uk, enter, and it's turned QuickNav back on by default. If I start right arrowing.
Reload button. Homepage. Visited. BBC. Banner. Landmark. Accessibility links. Heading level 2.
I'm just using the right arrow.
Skip to content.
We could click on any of these by doing an up and down arrow. Now you might think that because QuickNav is on and we're on a web page, that hitting H, for example, will jump to headings. Unfortunately not. If I hit H, nothing happens. So unfortunately, you either have to hold down the VO keys plus command. So that's control, option, command, all three, and then you can hit first letters like H.
Latest as Boris Johnson gives coronavirus briefing. Heading level 3. Main, landmark.
Or I could hit numbers 1, 2, 3, etc. to get to those level of headings. G for graphics.
Image not found.
No images. B for buttons, etc. But what I'm going to do is use the rotor from the arrow keys. And as we heard last week, to do that, you can use the left and up to go through the rotor one way and the right and up to go through the rotor the other way. So let's do right and up.
Lines. Images. Headings.
And now
25 headings.
Ooh, 25. We're on headings and the up and down arrow keys now will just jump through headings. So I'll do down arrow.
Live now. Heading level 3. Parks closing as tourists urge to stay away. Data
just
simulations predict
down.
Premier League season.
Hitting control to stop. Let's do up and right again.
Links. Form controls.
Form controls.
10 form controls.
Let's arrow down.
Dismiss this banner button.
Let's dismiss that banner. Don't know what it is. With up and down arrow to click.
Vertical scroll bar. 16 pick.
There you go. Now, one other thing I'd like to show you is using the item chooser, which I think is brilliant. To do this, I'll go out of QuickNav quickly. I'm going to hold down the VO keys and I.
267 I. Search field. Is editing. Insertion point at start.
You can use this wherever you are. We happen to be on a web page here. It's brought all the things that it's found on a page into a list, and you can start typing. So let's look for corona, C-O-R-O-N.
Four items, coronavirus in an eye, latest news and advice.
So it's found four items with the coronavirus mentioned in it. Let's do VO right arrow.
Coronavirus in an eye, latest news, coronavirus pandemic, 2. Fellaini tests positive for coronavirus, 3.
And VO spacebar is the same as doing an up and down arrow when you're not in quick nav.
Fellaini tests positive for coronavirus.
So here we are on the heading about this poor person with the virus. If we wanted to start reading down from this point to the rest of the web page, then we're out of quick nav at the moment. It's VOA.
Fellaini tests positive for coronavirus. Heading level 3. From football. NRL to continue until government stops it. Heading level 3. From rugby league.
I'll just hit the control key to shush it up. Now, in quick nav, you'd think that would just be A, but unfortunately not. As I mentioned before, first letter navigation doesn't work at the moment with quick nav in iOS. One final thing to mention, which I think is the most useful tip of all, and this works on the Mac as well, is to copy the last phrase that was spoken to the clipboard. That could be a heading, that could be a whole paragraph, it could be even a whole page if you've done a select all with Command A, and that is VO, that's Control Option, and the Shift, VO Shift C. Let's do that.
We must stay active. Sport England boss heading level 3 copied to clipboard.
Copied to clipboard. There you go. Really, really useful tip, that one. Okay, guys, some top tips on how to get around with the keyboard in iOS on a web page. Back to the studio.
Well, thank you, Robin. Fantastic information there, of course, to get us up to date with how to use our keyboards with iOS, but more importantly, how to get on the web as well. Really, really interesting, Robin. And, you know, what I like about that is, you know, you've really explained, I think the item chooser is a really useful one, although I did want to ask you about the item chooser, actually. Can't you just switch quick nav on and arrow up and down once you're in there?
Oh, it's so if with quick nav on, it would be left and right arrow because you're doing VO left and right arrow. Yeah, for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but yes, absolutely, you could. I've actually, since your demo last time, lived in quick nav.
Have you?
By default in iOS. I think it's the right thing to do. So, yeah, occasionally you have to come out. I haven't tried it on the iPad, whether first letter navigation works. Maybe some listeners can tell us, but I would love to live in quick nav. And, you know, that first letter navigation not working at the moment, at least on iOS as opposed to iPadOS, is the problem, making you jump out of it from time to time.
Yeah.
But yeah, even with quick nav on, zooming through the rotor is so intuitive, and then just using up and down arrows to zip around. And obviously, if there's a table, then you would take the rotor round to vertical navigation, and then you would just go down through the columns or left and right through the rows, and that is brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you can tell us your thoughts. Email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Lots of emails coming in about that. Now, Andy, are you there?
Hello.
Oh, he's there. Fantastic. Right. Well, we're going to get into the emails. Then he's terrified to talk into that mic now. Yeah. I don't know what's going on with that microphone of yours.
Bash it against the wall. It was working before we went on air, and now we're here on air where it's not working.
So. Well, it sounds beautiful now, so we're going to take advantage of it, and we're going to get some emails.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Right, let's get into the emails then, Andy. What have you got for us?
Right, so this first one is from Peter. He says, "Hi everyone, hope you are all okay and not suffering too much. I've heard on the news that cinema chains are going to release films so that they can be streamed on the TV. I can't wait to see The Invisible Man with audio description. Regards," that's from Pete in Nottingham.
How can you see The Invisible Man?
Yes, it's a little play on words here. Yeah, The Invisible Man is a new film that's coming out this year. Currently, apparently, the fifth highest grossing film of this year so far. But it's just going to go straight to the streaming services.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's right. Now, streaming services, interesting. So it is on iTunes. And it's on Sky Store Premier. They've set up this new thing called Sky Store Premier. You know, you can't go to the movies, so we bring them to you type thing. And that's fine. Now, on Sky, you're not going to get AD on anything on demand, so that's out of the window, so you're not going to get audio description there. Checked iTunes for The Invisible Man. It's there. Audio description is not there. So, there you go. Maybe coming soon. Who knows?
I pre-ordered Rise of Skywalker because I like to, you know, watch things. I can wait until things come out on iTunes rather than going to the cinema. And I heard on the news last week that they have made it available for streaming through iTunes amongst other platforms. But my pre-ordered button is still showing as a pre-order. So I have no idea, listeners, what's going on there. Is it just in the States, maybe? I want to watch my final episode of Star Wars.
Boring. But, you know, look, fine. If that's what you want to do with your night, then that's up to you. You're entitled to that, Robin. You are entitled.
It had a rotten rating on Rotten Tomatoes, so
That's not good. Well, I didn't see that one last night. I was going through the films, and there were lots of movies there. I'm trying to remember. There was The Hunt was the other one that came to the cinema, and Emma. I think those are the three that are doing the rounds from the cinema, that were in the cinema, that have come straight to the streaming services now. And none of them had AD. Well, maybe it's just all, you know, catching up with itself, I suppose. But you would think that if they get the movie, they could get the AD, they get the subtitles. So, you know, surely it's in the same folder on the computer somewhere at Universal. Right, anyway, we shall continue pushing for this. Actually, on that point, Better Call Saul on Netflix, a lot of people talking on Twitter about this, saying that Better Call Saul doesn't have audio description from Netflix and hasn't done for a while. Netflix just keeps saying, it's coming. Well, you know, so it's Christmas. So come on, Netflix, what are you doing? Can we get this sorted, please? There are people who want to watch this. Lots of people getting in touch with Netflix, but no joy as yet getting the answer. So, yeah, we shall watch with interest. Okay, Andy, what else is in the mailbag today?
I am really enjoying your podcast, says John. Contrary to what you think, it has a wealth of good information. You recently had a question about sound when the computer starts. Most computers these days do not have a speaker on the motherboard. One can be purchased and connected, but this is beyond the realm of most users. I have never seen a setting in the BIOS to turn this on. Also, with regards to cameras on the iPhone, the camera on the newer phones makes it easier for the IRA team to see because of the wider angle. When using Seeing AI, it does a better job of finding barcodes. And finally, with Voice Dream Scanner, the text recognition is improved. For these reasons and the fact that I love new tech, I've already ordered the new iPad Pro, I will continue using the iPhone 11. Keep up the good work. That's from John.
Thanks, John. He thinks we're useful, Robin.
Yeah, that's great. Brilliant. I was sure there was one person out there that did. So thank you.
You're the nominated person this week, Robin. You're the one, or John, I should say, John. You're the one who likes this. Right, let's go on to another email. What have you got, Andy?
So this is from another John, a different John. Hi, team. Yes, back after a while. Two questions. Steve, the Logitech Bluetooth keyboard you're reviewing, what is the on-off switch like? Is it the one where you press in or slides to the right or the left? The Apple one I have has a button that you press, but you have no idea if it's on or off without looking at the phone. Secondly, could anyone do a feature on using Zoom with a PC? I can't find any accessible podcasts that talk about Zoom with speech on the PC. As more organizations are going over to Zoom with the current state of the country, I think it's a good feature at this time. Maybe do Zoom for iOS and other platforms. Our choir have gone over to it, strange as it is, due to the delay. We can hear our leader, but we are unable to hear each other sing. Keep up the excellent work. Robin, I have kept all of the dot-to-dot podcasts since the first. I may have a dot-to-dot binge pod at some stage. Am I sad or what?
That's from the... dot-to-dot problem. No, that's thanks. John. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. I think Robin should definitely do a Zoom demo for next week. I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there.
It is actually a brilliant platform, as we all know. So, yeah, somebody should.
Well, look, and I should have said this at the top of the show, but of course we are respecting the rules of social distancing here at Tech Talk. And I think we do this every week anyway, because I don't know if it's because we all can't stand each other or what, but ultimately we always keep a considerable distance between us, because the studio that Andy and I normally sit in is quite a wide studio, so Andy's away the other side of the room somewhere, and Robin's at the other side of the country. So, you know, we seem to be respecting the rules pretty well here. And we use Zoom. This is how we all connect, and that's why sometimes you hear a bit more, because I'm recording this in my studio at home, and Robin's on Zoom, as is Andy, from their respective homes as well. I should ask the obvious question. You know, we're going to get some top tips on working from home a bit later. You know, an article that Robin's written about this, then we're going to hear that in audio coming up. But, you know, I have to ask the obvious question here. I mean, I know it's very important to make sure you've got the laptop and the right software and the connection to the networks and all that stuff. What about biscuits? You know, Robin, what kind of biscuit do you suggest?
Flapjack.
What?
Made by the fair hand of someone who is very, very good at baking.
Oh, so you're cheating. You're using in-house staff, are you?
Yeah, in-house talent.
The butler, the baker, and the candlestick maker, they're all going for it, are they? Right, okay, so you've got homemade flapjacks. What have you got, Andy?
I'm on the Fox's chocolate, I don't know what you would call them, they're shaped like rings, almost like...
not party rings?
No, selection not party box. Rings, no. Yeah,
oh, selection
like
box
Fox's,
biscuits.
Fox's, like a chocolatey things. The Fox's biscuits, as the TV advert used to say.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I've got bourbon creams.
Nice.
They're not homemade either. But yeah, I must admit, a bourbon cream, or if I'm going crazy, a custard cream. I like a custard cream.
They do savour it as well.
I do like a custard cream with tea. That's,
I sense a new show on the horizon.
Biscuit no Central.
Tech talk. Biscuit talk.
Biscuit talk. Oh, let's get that done. Come on. Maybe we need to start a sideline on the podcast. Right, look, back to more serious questions about the Logitech keyboard. John's asking about the switch to turn it on and off. It's at the left-hand side, at the top left-hand side, kind of on the side, and it's a switch that you have to push up or push up, I suppose.
Push away from you.
Yeah, push away from you, yeah. And nice, I don't know if you can hear the click. Oops, nearly dropped the keyboard. Don't do that. So it's got a satisfying click to it. That's what Tech Talk's come to, demonstrating clicks. But yeah, there you go. So it's got a satisfying click to it.
I would say nice to keyboard. John's point about the Apple keyboard, I totally understand what he meant. And for the longest time, I was very afraid that it would turn itself on in my bag when I was, you know, taking it out to meetings, etc. I thought it would just take the merest tap on that button on the right hand side, but it doesn't. It takes a much longer press than that, a good second or so. So be reassured that if you want to take that with you, mashing on the keys or the odd jostle of that button won't turn it on.
No, just to be clear, that's the one that has the power button. Is it on the right hand side on the side? Yeah.
Yeah, the Magic Keyboard.
So the one I've got is the Magic Keyboard 2, which has got a proper big clicky switch. I'll let you hear that one. We're going to compare clicks, right? So this is the Apple Magic Keyboard 2. Listen to that. Okay. Yeah. Wow, what a click, eh? This is where it's come to.
Either of those.
Yeah.
This is good radio.
It's great, isn't it? Yeah. Click radio. Well, there you go. So I hope that's told you something, if not anything. But no, basically, what I would say is that the new one, the Magic Keyboard 2, has got a proper flick switch on it. So, you know, much better. But it goes along the back. So it's actually on the back of the keyboard, which is kind of nice as well. Good for the bag. So, yeah, okay, thanks, John, for that. And glad you're enjoying the show. Let's get another email in.
This one is about keyboards as well. This is from Ian. He says, hello, Tech Talk team. I was interested in your item on keyboard use with an iPhone. I have a very nice Anker keyboard, which I used on a fairly regular basis. However, since getting a Braille display, it has been lying unused in the drawer of unused things. You can do all you can do with a keyboard on a Braille display with the added advantage that you can turn speech off. This should be an inducement for Stephen and Robin to get to grips with Braille. At the moment, I am typing this message while listening to the radio on my phone. I couldn't do that with a keyboard. That's from Ian.
Yeah, it's a good point, Ian. It is a good point. Robin, we should probably do that more. Although
I'm not saying anything.
You can't, because you're hopeless. You can't even read the paracetamol box.
Yeah. Good point, Ian. Yeah, really good point.
Yeah. Your mic's going again, Andy, just so you know.
Oh, no.
It's terrible. I don't know what is going on with that microphone of yours, but I can only apologise to our listeners about it. It's all Andy's fault.
The world's falling apart. I think we can cope.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get by it. Right. There are more important things to worry about. Okay, let's get another email then.
This one is from Michael. Dear Stephen, thank you. Thanks for the advice, downloading and copying books to my stream. Since I wrote the email Andy read on air, I had realized what I was doing wrong, and now I can copy the zip file straight to my $DTB folder and then unzip it. This is now working great for me. Thank you to the team. That's from Michael.
Yeah, no worries, Michael. Glad we could help. That's one of the challenges, of course. You get the book from RNIB, and I must admit, at first I did the same thing. I just copied the book straight across from the downloads folder straight into the $DTB folder on the stream, and it wouldn't work, and I thought, that's odd. But then I realised I had to unzip the file. I wouldn't have known that if it wasn't actually from Paul Porter's tip that came out in one of the Access IT magazines from RNIB. So yeah, really glad to give that to you. So yeah, glad that worked for you, Michael. Okay, let's get another email then.
This one is from Garth. Hi guys, greeting to you from Cove in Southern Ireland. I love your show and I never miss our Thursday night appointment. I'm a blind vet and I did my rehab at Sir Ian Fraser House in Brighton way back in 1978. We were all taught Braille and we all got our own way, either used it or we discarded it. The ubiquitous PC hadn't even got off of the ground. We were all marveled over the IBM golf ball typewriter. So here is my point. I did acquire an Opticon, which was the SMI optical to tactile converter. What an awesome device. Very expensive in its day, but so versatile. I soon became very adept on the Opticon, so I naturally ditched Braille. I did a degree course and even did math. Now, there is no OCR today which can give you the math symbols like the Opticon could do under your finger. I even, with great alarm, watched my perfect signature deteriorate into a meaningless scrawl as I lost the art of handwriting. So here's my question. Why has no one in our high-tech green world slotted an AI into the old Opticon? Imagine this device on steroids and given all the sans serif and serif print to your fingertips. Next question. Should anyone know where I can get a great serviceable Opticon in great condition, then I'll beat a track to their door. In conclusion, I now have an Alva Braille controller and I'm trying my best to relearn Braille. Is UED Online the best place to revamp this lost dotty language? I do have an RNIB Braille primer, but it is 6 dots and now computer Braille uses 8 dots. My kingdom for an Opticon. Your mate in Cove, that's from Garth.
So sorry about the audio quality, folks. We're going to keep going with it because there's no other way, frankly. But thank you so much for getting in touch, Garth. Really appreciate that. And I must admit, the Opticon passed me by. I'm maybe too young to know about the Opticon. I'm thinking you're probably in the same boat, Robin.
A lot older than you are, but no, I don't. I've never seen one in the wild or used one myself. They do sound really good. The closest I've got is one of those fancy things that you can press your hand or you can push it on your face. It's got lots of, you know, pins and it kind of raises up in relief. Have you ever seen one of those?
Is that the slate?
No, this is nothing to do. This is a toy.
Oh, I see. Just, right. Okay.
Yeah. But I imagine that it's something like that. But yeah, I mean, the Canute, I think, is the closest, and we're definitely going to have a demo of that either next week or the week after, which is, you know, 9 lines of 40 cells of Braille, which is absolutely brilliant. But yeah, bring it back. And then in this kind of digital age, who knows what you could display on it and you'd get a perfect tactile version. Absolutely.
I think that's the point about the Opticon that everybody talks about, because I've never used it or seen it, but my understanding is that it does allow you to write, and that's the key point, isn't it? That, you know, you learn to write, you understand words, you understand letters, how to write properly, rather than, you know, Braille, which is essentially giving you your own unique version of English. But, yeah, I don't know. Is it too late for that kind of tech?
No, I don't think so. I would like to think we could go back to it because there's no, apart from like thermoform diagrams and 3D printed illustrations, you know, you're never going to get the exact shapes of what letters are like and, diagrams and charts and things. As Garth was saying, you know, you'd be able to tell the difference between a serif font and a sans serif font. And if somebody's never seen that, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know how useful that knowledge would be, but, you know, it's all good information. And I think that the more we can bring that sort of tech back into play, the better, definitely.
Yeah, it is interesting. So we were watching a movie the other night called Wait Until Dark, starring Audrey Hepburn and Alan Arkin. Great movie. And it was interesting. The film is all about a woman who is blind. Audrey Hepburn plays the woman who is blind, lives in a Manhattan apartment, and her job is, or she, in the film, she is someone who is trying to deal with an evil trio who are trying to get a doll from her house because it contains drugs. If essentially someone's planted it in the house and they want to try and get it out of the house. It was a really interesting movie, actually, but one of the interesting things that about it for me was how she coped as a blind person and how she presented it. And you know what? I'll say something. Considering the movie was made back in 1967, it was pretty forward-thinking in a lot of ways. No one really gave any assistance or help. Certainly her husband wasn't giving her any help. It was a case of, look, you have to learn to do this. You have to be independent. And one of the things that she did was she wrote Braille. She wrote Braille using this, and I think it must have been the pen and slate system that was in place then.
I would have thought so.
Yeah, but she used an actual typewriter to write letters to people, but she was able to do that as well as using the slate for her own use, you know, for her own notes. Really interesting, really interesting. And I could see the slate. I could see that come by. Maybe not the Opticon, but I don't know.
I mean, the hand frame, I don't think has ever gone away for you know, taking down quick notes, etc. But that is a classic movely. Needless to say, I've never watched it, of course, but because I don't do TV or films as a rule. But a top tip for Garth, he also mentioned, you know, how can you stop your signature degenerating into a sort of scribble or kind of a mess?
Well, get your support worker to do it.
My top tip is start off with your signature being an indecipherable scribble. That's what I did. And it never degenerated. Yeah. It doesn't have to be legible by any means, as long as it's relatively consistent. And, you know, that's your signature. So, yeah, just start off with a scribble.
Okay. We're going to bear with Andy and his poor little microphone there. And
what's going wrong?
I'm so sorry, Andy. I don't know what's going wrong with your microphone, but we'll maybe get you to unplug it and plug it back in again in a minute. Yeah. But
I'm going to go throw it against the wall.
Yeah, tell you what, well, let's get you to do that because I know you've got a couple of emails coming up that are quite long emails. So obviously we want to be able to enjoy them. So what we'll do is we'll take a short break because I want to focus now on working from home. Now, of course, with COVID-19, many of us are being asked to work from home. Who knows, by the time you know, you're hearing this, we may be being forced to work from home as a result of a government lockdown. Who knows what is going to happen over the coming days? And as I say, you know, we put this show together 24 hours in advance, so you know, things can change in that period of time. So you know, we're either being asked or forced at this stage to work from home when you're hearing this. But when you are working from home, there are obviously things you have to think about. And Robin, you wrote an article which is explaining a lot of this, haven't you?
Absolutely. So what we're going to hear in a moment is probably between half and two thirds of the longer article, which I'm hoping we can post in the podcast feed as well as a full article. It's also going to be available online, so we can put information about that in the show notes. But it's really a 101. It's not just from a VI angle or a disability angle, but it covers all the bases of things that you need to think about, you know, the top tips when you're working from home. The person you're going to hear is my son Sam, talking about the coronavirus. He was working, doing kind of voluntary service overseas until last week. He was supposed to still be out there, but he had to bring his flight forward. Luckily, he managed to. He would be stuck out there permanently now because the day after he flew back from Ethiopia last Wednesday, Lufthansa cancelled every single one of their flights, as did most other international airlines. So he literally wouldn't have been able to bring us this. So yeah, thanks to Sam for recording this piece.
Okay, let's hear it.
Working from home. This information is intended to help those employees who are new to home working and need to know the essential elements of working safely and efficiently at home in the short, medium, or long term. What will I need? Work may have already provided you with the equipment, IT setup, and guidelines for working from home, but here's the essential elements of what you'll need. A laptop or computer. Any assistive technologies from work. Stable and reliable internet access. Secure remote access to the corporate network or intranet. Access to corporate emails, and a work phone if company policy. For many companies, accessing the corporate email, intranet, and file storage could be as simple as securely logging into one or more websites or cloud applications. Other organizations may require that you use a VPN, virtual private network, to connect to these systems, or indeed to the internet as a whole, to ensure that your connection is private and secure from attack. If you need to use a VPN, your IT team should have instructed you how to set this up. Setting up your home workspace. The first thing you'll need to do is to decide the place in your home that you'll be working. Designate a suitable space to work. As much as you might want to wake up and work directly from the comfort of your own bed, in the long term it's not going to aid in your productivity. This doesn't mean you need to go and create an exact office space in your house, with office furniture, desks and chairs, but just have an area that can be used solely for working purposes so you can differentiate when you are in the working zone. One important aspect is ensuring that your setup is safe for you to work at for longish periods. We'll discuss breaks shortly, but the main priority is to ensure that the place where you'll be spending many hours working on your computer each day is fundamentally safe from an ergonomic standpoint. Now let's look at some top tips for a safe working setup. Don't work on a surface that's too low or too high. You should not be hunched over when typing, so a coffee table is out for working on for any length of time. Similarly, you shouldn't be typing under your chin, so forget a breakfast bar with a standard chair. A kitchen or dining table is slightly higher than a working desk, so you may want to add a cushion to your seat. If you do, it's really important that your feet are still on the floor so as not to put pressure on the backs of your knees. You can avoid this by putting something like a thin box or thick book on the floor. Top tip: many people use a standing desk to avoid sitting all day whilst working. Recreate this at home by taking an ironing board and setting it at a comfortable height to type while standing up. To avoid wobble and a possible laptop catastrophe, put it against a wall to make it more stable. This should not be your permanent workstation, but for variety, it's an excellent option. Change it up. Constant, regular changes to your working position are a good thing. If you want to work standing at your kitchen work surface for a time, then go for it. If you want to spend the morning on the sofa with the laptop on your knee, then go ahead, although this shouldn't be your permanent workspace. It's not great for your arms and nowhere near as comfortable as you might first think. Also, don't forget that your TV can be used as a really huge computer monitor. The way it's positioned may not make it ideal for full-time use, but consider how it might be temporarily and safely moved onto a table or desk if larger text is what you usually need at work. Dealing with distractions. If there are children or other people around in your home, try as much as possible to keep this as a separate, private working space for you. It's important to help them understand that this is your working area, and try to clearly signal when you're working and when you're available. If you have children under a certain age at home, you'll obviously need to discuss this with work and make a suitable, flexible arrangement that safely balances work and childcare. Take regular breaks. It's important to take breaks from your work to maintain productivity and prevent injury. At home, you don't have the cues for lunch breaks or time away from your desk that rejuvenate you, ready for the next challenge, so you need to schedule that time in. Taking regular breaks will help you remain focused and remove any kinks that are building up due to what might be a less than perfect ergonomic working setup. Set yourself working hours. One of the hardest aspects of working remotely is concentrating on the task at hand. There are many distractions that do not exist at work, and it's easy to become distracted by what's happening on Facebook, the TV that you decided to turn on briefly in a coffee break, visitors popping over, or even the mound of laundry that needs doing. This can mean you find yourself working sporadically throughout the days, evenings, or even weekends. One benefit of working from home is that you can break off if something important does actually arise, but keeping regular hours as if you were at work is key. By the way, those rigid hours don't need to be 9 to 5, so long as this is okay with your employer. Remaining focused and positive. During this period of working from home, our mental health is something we need to prioritise as much as our physical health. We've mentioned taking breaks to help keep well and focused. It's important to use those breaks to concentrate on positive activities and avoid things that may increase our levels of stress and anxiety. Get physical. Use breaks to do some physical exercise if you can. short amounts of physical activity of any kind is a really good counterbalance to even long periods of sitting. If you have stairs, then walking up and down them for 5 minutes will get your heart pumping. Do some squats or star jumps, or if you have a smart speaker, ask for a workout and it will offer you several, from a short high-intensity workout to a yoga or Pilates session. You could also do some quick household chores. They're good exercise and you'll feel virtuous for getting the housework done. If you have a dog or a garden, then it's useful to get some fresh air. Activity combined with the added bonus of fresh air is an excellent tonic to stress and anxiety. If you have neither, then open a window while you work. Avoid too much media. During this period, it will be vital for our mental health to avoid the constant checking and monitoring of news and especially social media. Keeping strict limits on when we check these will help us remain more positive, keep a good work-life balance, and be more focused and productive. Just as we shouldn't be checking work emails on evenings and weekends, avoid checking social and other media throughout the day. Put your phone out of arm's reach, preferably in another room, and keep your attention on work and not the wider world outside and all its worries. Whatever you do, do not have constant rolling news on in the background on the TV or radio. Instead of putting on the news, select some suitably calming music that will help with the positive working atmosphere. It can increase focus and reduce feelings of isolation. You can even ask your smart speaker for background cafe or office sounds. If it helps, there are apps you can use on your laptop or work phone to limit or block distractions, such as news and social media apps or websites, so you can really focus on work, although IT may need to give permissions for such apps to be installed. Use voice and video as well as text. When you're working remotely, what you are required to do can be lost in text translation, and things may not be as clear as if you were discussing a project in person. It is beneficial if you can supplement email or text communication with frequent online face-to-face and voice interactions, depending on what type of discussion you are having. Audio or video calls with colleagues are not only great for collaborative working, but they can be good company for isolated team members. Some teams actually leave a group online meeting going throughout the day so that it feels like the usual office team environment. Top tip. Be careful though, to be properly dressed for a video call. Many an employee has been caught out when, during an online meeting, the video from their laptop camera was on by default and it caught them in their pajamas. Many home workers still choose to dress for work. You may want to consider this as it can help you get into the work zone, as well as avoiding any chance of a pajama faux pas. Having problems with home working. If you're feeling uncomfortable, having difficulties staying focused, or experiencing any other issues associated with working from home, it's really important to let work know. It might be that you're struggling with some aspects of your role without having colleagues at hand, or an issue with the physical or technical setup of your equipment. For help with setting up your equipment, go to www.mycomputermyway.com. This contains step-by-step guides to all the accessibility settings of the Mac, Windows, Android, and iOS. A good way to let work know about any issues you experience and explore many more helpful tips is to create a clear talents profile. This will help you ensure that your workspace is set up correctly, as well as guiding work in discussing all your needs. Go to www.cleartalentsatwork.com. It's free and easy to use.
And we will have a longer version of that article available on our website, on our podcast, I should say. Yeah, we don't have a website, but we do have a podcast. So, yeah, we shall get up there onto the podcast and we'll tweet that out as well so people can listen to it. Robin, that was your son, Sam.
Yep, big strapping guy.
Yeah, sounds it as well. He's got a great voice. He should be reading books. What's wrong? Come on.
He's... life ambition at the moment is literally this, to be a professional bodybuilder, and he's almost there. He really is.
I wouldn't argue with him. Right, let's get Andy back on. Hopefully he's with us now. We've connected with him on Skype. Are you there, Andy?
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you just about. Cool. Just about. Right, okay, brilliant. That's great.
No,
we're fine. Right. That's good. We can hear you, and that's all that matters. Put it this way, I can hear enough of you. That's all I'm going to say. Right, let's... Yeah, absolutely. Right, that's much better than that terrible mic. Right, okay, get that sold. Right, back to the emails.
Email, we get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Yeah, there are tons of emails in the inbox. Let's get back into them, Andy.
Yeah, these emails are regarding our discussion on the RNIB Reading Services website. This first one is from Julian. Hello again. Firstly, let me say that the RNIB and its books library are splendid, and I appreciate everything that they do. I wanted to get that out of the way because now I get a bit negative. I emailed last week with my first thoughts about the new reading services site. Since then, I have had a bit more time to ferret around in the website. As a result, my first question is, is the library going to get its own dedicated smart device apps? I have to ask because once beyond the most basic search, the website is an absolute pain to use. I recognize the basic layout. It is very similar to one that my local county library service use, which is why I will say with some confidence that this is a website designed much more for a librarian than a man in the street consumer. Anyone coming to this after using the Overdrive app is likely to find it very clunky. In particular, anyone with some remaining usable sight is going to miss the pictures of book covers that made browsing friendly in Overdrive. The implementation is also not great. To take something really basic, if you have multi-page results, once you get to the bottom of a page, you will find links to other pages. Fine. But when you click one of these, you will be taken not to the top of the next page, but to the bottom. Since when is English read from bottom upwards? Come on, RNIB, this is really basic stuff. Parts of advanced search are also baffling. For instance, there is a combo box for produced by that offers the choice of RNIB only for all. Thinking that might mean that HarperCollins books might be excluded, I selected all. I then hit the search button. The first thing that happened was an announcement that 36 non-RNIB publications have been excluded. As Homer Simpson might say, "Doh!" The results are all over the place. Now, there is no time or space to go into detail here, but try to do a search for astronomy. The first result was I got was a book about the Battle of Austerlitz. And later on, there was one about ostriches. In fact, just about everything except astronomy. By the way, the categories section contains an atrocity. Science fiction and fantasy are not the same thing. That rumbling you hear is the likes of Arthur C. Clarke, Isaac Asimov, and Ian M. Banks spinning in their graves at the life's work being conjoined with fantasy. I do hope that the RNIB is regarding this as a work in progress rather than a finished product. Because it's in its current form, it's going to discourage a lot of us. You can forward this email to reading services if you like, and even include my name. People who are afraid of return fire should not visit a battlefield. Now, for you, Stephen. Right. Julian has some words aimed at you, in particular, Stephen. He goes on a little bit further to say, "Sorry, sorry, sorry. I have tried very hard not to send you another email, but it is no good. You are the voice of authority in our world, and when I think that voice speaks false, I must challenge it. Twice recently, I have heard you say with total certainty that audiobooks downloaded from the new reading service websites are of higher quality than those downloaded from Overdrive. And twice I have thought, no, they are not. I have heard many books downloaded from Overdrive, and now I have heard two in DAISY format. If there is a difference, I cannot hear it. I do agree that some of the older recorded books do sound terrible, but I've always put that down to the fact that they are older recordings, probably recorded using some obsolete equipment into analog media that has already degraded before being digitized. Anyway, I thought, there is a way that I can put this to the test. Fortunately, I still have access to the last three recordings I downloaded from Overdrive. They were Conclave by Robert Harris, The House of Silk by Anthony Horowitz, and Prelude to Foundation by Isaac Asimov. I had to look into these files, disregarding graphics and the like, and concentrating on the guts of the audio, the MP3 files. I then downloaded the same books from the reading services, unzipped the DAISY file, and checked those MP3 files. The results are as follows. Conclave from Overdrive, 8 files totaling 228 megabytes. From the reader services, 30 files totaling 201 megabytes. The House of Silk from Overdrive, 8 files totaling 259 megabytes. From reader services, 37 files totaling 228 megabytes. And Prelude to Foundation, Overdrive, 14 files totaling 381 megabytes. And from the reader services, 12 files totaling 333. I expected the larger number of files for DAISY, although preload is a strange exception. The important thing is that in every case, the total MP3 size is smaller for the DAISY files. This being the case, how can the audio quality be higher? Now, I know that there have been several MP3 standards over the years, and that even with a standard, there can be variations between coding and encoding software. I would have liked to examine the MP3s to a deeper level, but I could not find any suitable software. Perhaps you have, and you can prove me wrong. In the absence of my conclusion is that if you can hear better quality, it must be because A, you've changed the software and it's given you better playback, or B, you have changed hardware and it's given you better playback, or finally C, like a medical placebo, it's all in your mind. As always, feel free to shoot me down, but have a good argument. Saying it just is okay doesn't really cut it. Regards. That's from Julian. He has a PS as well, Stephen, but do you have any responses so far?
Oh, well, where do I start? I mean, honestly, look, you know, I don't want to shout about this. You know, it does feel a little bit like one of these respectable disagreement things, but, you know, I don't want to just say it just is okay, but it just is okay. Because it is. Look, I'm not just the only one saying this, right? Let's hear from Alison Long. I've clipped this out of the interview that we did with Alison a few weeks back, where she talked specifically to that point about audio quality. Here's what she had to say.
And, you know, it's full DAISY audio. So, you know, you get the navigation if you're using a DAISY player or app. And, you know, the quality is so much better. I think that's been a really standout feedback from customers. We know that the, you know, the compression rate, if we want to get technical, you know, has been pretty low with the Overdrive book. So much better quality read.
I'm seeing a lot of tweets online praising that, saying the audio quality is so much better. Audio is our pictures, right, as blind people. So,
yeah.
You know, it's got to be good. And, yeah, a lot of people being very praiseworthy of that. And that's good. That is great to hear, because that one of my hates of Overdrive in some ways was the sound of the audio.
Yeah, some of them sounded like you were in the toilet,
yeah,
didn't they?
They were terrible, yeah. And it was just the compression on them. The actual story obviously was recorded perfectly.
Yeah, and if you had it on CD or USB, completely different.
It's fine, quality. Yeah. So, you know, that, maybe that's part of it there, I don't know. But, you know, when it came from CD and it came from USB, it wasn't full audio DAISY quality, because those files were the ones that were used. But I can absolutely categorically tell you, Julian, and I only know this for sure because I was part of the team who developed a lot of the books and converted a lot of the books for the Overdrive service. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, the audio quality on these books is shocking. And it was because of the level of compression that was being used on the books. And what's happened since is that the books have all been rebuilt, if you like, or they're actually just using the original DAISY files, which means the audio quality is better.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it just depends on the titles that you happen to be comparing, new versus old. And as she said in the piece there, you know, if you'd have listened to them on CD or USB, if you'd have got them, you know, through snail mail, then chances are you'd have had a much better experience. The delivery of older titles, perhaps through the online, you know, the earlier version of Overdrive, when you couldn't rely on people having 4G necessarily, or, you know, infinite data on there, home broadband, then maybe they made different choices there. So yeah, maybe it depends on the titles. Maybe they've got cleverer with compression. Variable bit rate will save you a lot of file size for the same you know, bit rate of kbps or whatever you call it. So I don't know. Yeah, but I mean, he's probably been very lucky with the titles that he's listened to, and we're talking about different experiential you know, different people's experience on the ground. But certainly what Alison's saying there can't be discounted. You know, they've put a lot of effort into bringing a lot of titles up to scratch and getting a much more consistent level of quality. So that's really good news.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't just me. I mean, this is RNIB telling us this as a program, and indeed, you know, announcing this. So, you know, but I will respectfully disagree with you on this one, Julian. But, you know, again, if anybody finds any books that are of low quality, you know, you should tell us because we want to let the library know. I don't think that'll be the case, though, by the sounds of it.
We should certainly, though, before we leave his email, talk about the inconsistencies of search, etc. And the library, the lack of, you know, the gaps in the library. And I've certainly fed this back, and I'm quite keen for this to be resolved sooner rather than later. If they've got a series of books with huge gaps, you know, there are titles higher up in the series order and there are big chunks missing, you know, please do prioritize those over bringing new titles on board. Maybe, I don't know if that's justified, but
that's a matter of opinion, isn't it?
I know, it depends if you're really into a particular series of books. Hamish Macbeth, M.C. Beaton, brilliant. And the vagaries of the search, my sister was feeding that back to me as well. Really strange stuff there. So it sounds like they've got some metadata issues and some library gaps that I'd love to see addressed, because personally, I'm really happy with the quality.
And let's not forget the Easy Reader app as well. Up until, I think, the time we were recording and we'd spoken to Alison, it wasn't available, but after that, it did come out that you can now use the Easy Reader app on your smartphone. So there is an app out there. RNIB are not developing their own app. It is as simple as, you know, go and download Easy Reader. And I think the words I got from RNIB, whether this was official or not, I don't know. But the view I got was, you know, why reinvent the wheel? Which I think is absolutely the right approach. There's something that works, that's really good, people like it. The general consensus is that the Easy Reader is a brilliant app. And RNIB are, you know, using that. And
this isn't a coincidence either. So they have been working, Dolphin and the RNIB have been working together with the revamp to move away from OverDrive. Dolphin Easy Reader is the app to search for. The integration is brilliant. That's definitely the one to go for.
Look, there are so many emails on the Reading Services website. And, you know, we are going to hear more of that. There's some really interesting and positive stories as well about experiences. Coming up next week, we'll hear more of those because we want to hear about people's experiences on other platforms. Coming up, we have an email about someone's experience on a Mac, also general experiences using it on the desktop, and of course the Easy Reader version as well, which I haven't downloaded that yet. I've still been using the website with JAWS and be getting on fine. Julian makes reference to the problems he's been having, and he's using NVDA, and I do think there are some issues with NVDA screen reader versus using the other screen reader. So I'm conscious about that. You know, really conscious about that. So, you know, we'll get into all that next week on the show. That is it for our show this week. Thank you so much for being with us. Andy, thank you for putting up with all the nonsense technology-wise. We got there in the end.
We will try and get it fixed for next week. I can guarantee that.
He's going to kick that microphone up and down the street now. And Robin, thank you so much for being with me once again. Guys, I know you're all doing this, but please stay safe. And we will be back with you next week for another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, if you need any information or any support, contact RNIB 0303 123 9999 is the helpline number.